did see a meme, like, you know, for my generation, Gen X, grew up in the 80s, so like, Dad, what was scary when you were a kid? And the answer was, everything. Yeah. Like, literally everything is terrifying in the 80s. Like, you go to Chuck E. Cheese, horrifying. Right. Everything geared towards children was actually terrifying, so, yeah.
Thanks a lot, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, there's a sequel to Wizard of Oz comes out, and it's, like, terrifying in the 80s. Yeah.
I didn't even know about that. They must have buried that.
The witch has heads that are removable and keeps them in, like, a cabinet.
Like
and Dorothy,
do.
The Dorothy character opens cabinets, and there's heads talking to her. Yeah. It's really scary.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Nazaroff.
How are you, Patrick?
Excellent. And Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Great. Great. Welcome to the podcast. The first one post-Easter. First
Happy
one recording
Easter.
Post-Easter.
Yeah. Happy Easter, everybody. Yes.
7 weeks.
7 weeks.
You got seven,
buckle up.
7 weeks of me saying Happy Easter. You'll get used to it. It's fine.
Yeah. Hide some eggs. Eat a Reese's egg.
I would eat a Reese's egg for the next 7 weeks. I'm down with that.
Yeah, we on our youth group Instagram, we did a bracket to see what's the most popular Easter candy, and Reese's egg won.
Yeah.
I disagree.
It's science.
You disagree? What would be the
and
most
democracy.
Popular
Cadbury
Easter?
Cadbury egg.
Cadbury egg lost out to the chocolate bunny.
Chocolate bunny. No. Classic chocolate bunny. Useless.
That was shocking. I
agree. That was an upset.
Who was picking that over a Cadbury egg?
I asked the kids why they're picking that, and they said it's like synonymous for the Easter. It's getting that chocolate bunny in their Easter basket. I said, it's hollow. It's got nothing inside. It's like held up by foil.
Yeah.
It's just chocolate. I mean, there's nothing wrong with just chocolate.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'll eat an Easter bunny if it's given to me.
But next to the Cadbury egg.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree.
That's like saying, well, we're going to vote for Alabama to be number one because, you know, they're just this historic program that's always been great. And that can't be the reason.
I don't know what you're talking about, but Alabama's probably not number one on many things.
People understand. They get it.
People get it.
I believe it's football.
I was particularly referencing football. Okay. It could be any number of things. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Nick Saban. That's what I know.
Okay. There you go.
If you.
It's actually Saban, but that's fine.
It looks like last week's podcast probably had a little bit of some technical difficulties. So if you did not catch it, it's in there.
It's out there. It's fixed now.
It's fixed. Okay. Yeah.
For some reason, thought that it was March, and so it loaded in a weird spot. But it's fine. It's all fixed now.
Yeah, but if you look in your iTunes or Spotify, it's there. You know, it might be labeled under March 1st, so you might have to scroll down a little bit. Samuel is there.
Yeah, it's not there anymore. It's fine. Okay. It's all fixed.
All fixed.
So now it's back at the top where it ought to be. Okay.
Where ought to be. Okay, well, great.
Back on top again.
That's well, right. Today we're actually going to talk a little bit about, actually, Easter.
Easter?
Yes.
Yay. Easter bunnies?
The resurrection on Easter. Easter, Holy Easter. So.
Okay, so the real Easter, not the commercialized Walmart Easter. Okay, got it. All right.
But before we get there, we've got some news.
About Easter bunnies?
No, not about Easter bunnies.
I just figured we were going on theme here.
Everybody else has moved on from Easter. So.
Except us.
Right. That's the problem with the world.
Here we are.
That's the one problem with the world.
One of many. Yep.
Right.
We have a shortage here in the United States.
Grape nuts. No, wait, we fixed that.
Grape nuts is in the shortage, actually.
What?
But I'll get there in a second. Heinz ketchup shortage.
Uh-oh.
Yes, we're in a ketchup shortage.
Only Heinz? What about Hunt's?
I don't know about Hunt's, but here from USA Today says Heinz.
Okay.
Heinz is America's most popular brand of ketchup. I don't know if you have a personal brand, but Heinz is the
I don't really care for ketchup either way. I'm a long-standing advocate of anti-condiments, so, you know, it's fine.
Okay.
Well, that's not true. Not anti-condiments. Anti-ketchup and mustard. That's really what I'm anti.
Okay.
So what? What are you, pro-mayonnaise?
Actually, I'm kind of anti-mayonnaise, too. I like fancy condiments. I like salsas. Or like
salsa's not
spicy aiolis. Yeah, things like that.
A spicy aioli is mayonnaise.
It is not the same as mayonnaise.
It's just on a different label.
Taste the spicy aioli and then taste the mayonnaise. They are not the same thing.
All right.
What kind of psychopath just tastes the mayonnaise?
Just get yourself a little tasting spoon.
There are people. They go after that Dukes with a spoon, all right? There are people.
Yes.
So they're not my people.
You grew up around those people in South Carolina.
According to USA Today, it's hitting most... America's most popular brand, this ketchup shortage.
Is it ketchup or catsup?
With shortage at chains like Texas Roadhouse.
Oh no.
And Long John Silver's.
It's back again.
part of why I chose this. Yeah.
Only those two chains are running short?
Yes.
So well, that seems
these are shortages at chains like. Okay, so it's not.
So other similar
Long John Silver's only serves two customers a year, apparently, and you guys. So take your own ketchup.
Yes, it's because of COVID, because of the individualized packets. So that's what they're really...
Isn't that better for COVID?
...running low.
That's what they're...
Individual packets are running low because...
They used to have the pump thing?
Yes, because nobody's using the pumps anymore. And on tables at restaurants, even, they want to give you individualized packets because of COVID. Yeah, so there's a ketchup shortage. Now, Pastor David, is this going to affect you? You said you don't really eat condiments.
This will not affect me at all. I will not care one way or the other if there is ketchup on my table or not. In fact, I will go out of the way to give back. Now that I know that there's a shortage, I will take my ketchup packets and I will give back to the community and say, here you go, world. Take and enjoy these ketchup packets. These are for you.
Packets from my package store.
Yes. Yeah, you, and at church, you can put them in the offering plate here.
Yeah, that's right.
You're
pay this forward, yes. Yeah, you know, what about fries?
Listeners, please do not put ketchup packets in our offering plate.
No ketchup on fries?
Unless it's tied to a whole bunch of money.
I don't like ketchup.
Okay.
No ketchup.
Elise, fries, how about you? Was this going to affect you, the ketchup shortage?
I really only care when hash browns are involved. That's the only time I have to have ketchup. I am not going to either Texas Roadhouse or Long John Silver's for my hash browns.
That's fair. Okay. So, I wouldn't go to Long John Silver's for a hash brown either.
Right. I think I'll be able to weather this one just fine.
Okay. Yeah, but there are other things that are also in shortage. Grape nut cereal.
Oh. It's back.
Who is eating grape nuts? Are you guys also eating grape nuts?
I'm not eating grape nuts. But they're fans of grape nuts. They were going for $1,000 for a box on the black market. When people were trying to get their hands on grape nuts. It was a big deal. And now, is it Post that makes grape nuts? Whoever makes grape nuts has said, we've got them back in stock. It's okay. And they're actually refunding some people money for what they paid over normal price when they bought it on the black market. Yeah.
Eating grape nuts is eating gravel.
Yes.
I do not understand that one.
Yep. Yes, why would you want to pay more for this?
Right.
Usually you're eating grape nuts because you're tricking yourself into thinking it's a healthy cereal. It's not. I mean, that's a lot. And also microchips. That's also a shortage of microchips.
Microchips?
For dogs and...
No, for actually cars. It's affecting car production.
That's not
microchips
good.
In your car. Yeah, and then because of the...
Is that because all the microchips are on our vaccines? Is that where all the microchips
are? Yeah, they're now in your body.
They've all been injected.
That's good. I have noticed my cell service has been way better since I got the first dose. I don't know about anybody else.
Sure, it
seems like a good thing.
Wi-Fi signal boosts.
Well, just because ketchup has a shortage, there's good news from Heinz.
Uh-huh.
They've released some new flavors.
Okay.
Oh, no.
We've talked about Heinz flavors before because they had...
Cranch.
Cranch, that's right.
Classic Cranch.
Classic Cranch, yep.
Ranch and ketchup combined into one, finally, Cranch. I guess if you're desperate for ketchup, you can get yourself a bottle of Cranch and do some science and separate the ketchup and the ranch.
That seems impractical, but okay. Yeah.
A centrifuge, perhaps, would do that.
I don't think
that's
how centrifuge
works. Just your casual kitchen centrifuge. Pull it out.
Yeah, you don't have one on your table?
I don't, but I'm also pretty confident that's not how centrifuges work. So.
I think it is. It spins it, so it separates them.
It does spin it, but I don't think you can separate something that's been...
That's what it's
been
for.
Emulsified. It's not separated.
You don't even know what emulsified means.
I do know what emulsified means.
Shots fired.
Not separating a solid from a liquid. It's separating, you can't separate water from water.
Well, they do that to blood, though, to separate the plasma.
Thank
out.
You.
But those are
Thank
different
you.
Things.
But
yes,
and
ketchup
liquids.
And ranch are different
ketchup
things.
Ketchup and ranch are they're not. It's not the same thing.
We're going to figure this out.
Right.
Okay, well, here we go.
Write in, please. Save me.
We have three new flavors. You can rank them for me here. What you like. So first up, we have Hanch. We had Cranch. Move over Cranch. It's Hanch's turn.
Oh, no.
Hanch?
Yeah. You want to guess what's in Hanch?
Well, ranch and...
Well, yes.
Hot sauce?
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Ranch and hot sauce combined.
I could see it. It's like a spicy ranch or a jalapeno ranch or something. I could
see
that. That
sounds like indigestion to me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, heartburn. That's what that sounds like. Tarchup.
Tartar sauce.
Hard pass. Ketchup. Yeah.
And wasabioli.
Aioli and wasabi.
Yeah, yes. not a particularly creative name on that one. I would go with wioli, personally, as opposed to wasabioli.
Wioli.
Yes.
Or wasabi. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, so there you go. Which one of those three would be most interesting to you?
Wioli would be the most interesting.
Wasabioli.
Going with wioli.
Do we have to pick one? Yes. Can we say none of the above?
I said none of the above the last time he made us do this. So that's fine.
You got to pick one.
Liar. Oh. You don't have to pick anything. Patrick can't tell you what to do. He's not the boss of you. Yeah.
Ranch. Ranch.
Hanch.
Hanch.
Okay. Hanch. Ranch. That makes more sense. Yeah, like, human, human resources ranch. Yeah. Ranch.
Ranch.
Hanch. Okay, so we have a mix of hot sauce and ranch. Mm-hmm. You know,
if I gun to my head, I have to eat one of these. Hanch.
Yeah. You know, I wouldn't hate probably the tarchup if I'm eating a fried fish.
Oh,
or
I forgot about tarchup. Tarchup. I do that anyway when I go like get like fried oysters.
But I eat fried fish very rarely, so I mean,
If the person has a gun to your head, do you think they would provide you with the fried fish?
I hope so.
Yeah, or is it just the sauce?
Right. Spoon
like
it.
If Long John Silver's is out of ketchup, but they have a tarchup, I'm like that'll do.
You know, the odds of somebody holding a gun to your head in Long John Silver's anyway are already super high, so be prepared.
You're in the right place.
Yeah, any combinations Heinz should take a look at in the future that you think that they should combine?
Mm. I could see like something with salsa. Salsa and...
Ooh, like a creamy salsa of some kind.
Yeah, salsa and ranch probably has some potential.
Right?
Potential. A sanch or a salanch. A salanch, yep, it would be a salanch.
Okay.
Or ralsa, that's not bad either. Ralsa. I'm not like a big mustard fan, but I could see... Like mustard and like some other sweet thing other than honey.
Okay. So like you've got your other than honey? What's wrong with the mustard? Because
you already have a honey mustard.
Honey mustard already exists.
This is new. Yes.
So what's like an alternative sweetness? Like maybe a jelly and jelly and mustard.
Maybe a mustard and like a sweet and sour sauce.
Ooh, there you go. A sweet and sour mustard. Yeah.
Yeah. So that way, I mean, mustard will make it a little more sour.
Yeah, because like when you go to the Chinese restaurant, at least my parents always do this. You always mix the sweet and sour with the hot mustard to dip your egg roll in. That's how they always hit it. So sweet and sour mustard.
There you go, Heinz.
What would you call a sweet and sour mustard? Would it be sweetened mustard?
Yeah, that's the you don't want to use the sweet
mustard
part.
Mustard sour?
Nope. Yeah. Sour and musty.
Sour
mustite.
Mustite.
I like mustard. That's fun. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. There you go, Heinz. You're taking a bit of a hit for the ketchup packets.
Right.
You're gonna make it up on the back end all with mustard.
All those ideas are trademarked, by the way. So please send the royalty checks to Beyond Sunday Podcast at what's our address? 3801 South Panther Creek.
You'll figure it out. Yeah. You know where we live.
Just Venmo us.
All right. Let's get into our main topic tonight: the resurrection and hope. So this
kinda
is
throwing those out and hope.
Yes. Okay. So reading is an article here from Christianity Today by Tim Keller.
We've talked about him before.
Yeah.
Tim K.
He's a well-known
friend of the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Timothy Keller.
Yep. I don't know if he knows that he's a friend of the podcast.
Probably
so
not. But
should we tell him? Should we send him flowers?
Be like,
you're
Tim,
my Obi-Wan. Tim,
dear Tim, you're
Keller.
Our friend. Thanks for being our friend.
Yeah. So and he has written about. Four things about Christian hope for Christianity Today.
All right.
So we're going to take a look at that. And we're also going to take a look at the resurrection in general.
Okay.
Because when we come down to the Christian theology, Christmas gets all the attention.
It does.
Yep.
But
lots of gifts.
Lots of gifts. It's probably...
seasonal breaks. Lots of vacation time.
Yes. But Easter, Easter's
bells,
the big deal, really, in the church.
It
that's the big one. Or at least, you know, you got a whole weekend, too.
You've got 7 whole weeks, depending on who you ask.
That's true.
You know, you guys judge this, but we have 7 weeks because it's the central part of this faith. Anyway, we'll get into this. Just saying, it's a big deal, all
So let's maybe talk briefly about Easter how do you perceive it? How do you respond to that? I mean, what's your feelings about Easter Sunday?
Positive.
Okay.
Pro. That's right.
Great. Right. I'll check the box
Easter.
Here.
Yeah. I think it's nice. I'd always like to focus on the resurrection versus like the death on the cross part. And I've always thought it's kind of funny that we tend to always focus as Christians on the death on the cross. Like, we use the cross as our symbolism, all that kind of stuff. But to me, the big deal is the tomb, you know?
Yeah.
Because death we all experience, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the part that came after that that brings it home.
It does, yeah. I mean, that does, you know, bring up a good point of we, in iconology, the cross is central to Christian ideologies. But the empty tomb is probably... a bigger deal. I mean, you really can't have one without the other. I mean, they're kind of like, they go hand in hand.
You can't have resurrection without death.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, I can't just walk in tomorrow and be like, hey guys, I was resurrected today.
Right.
That's not the same. Yeah, that's not it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been often heard describing Easter / Holy Week as like the Super Bowl for the church. Like it's like a big deal for us, mm-hmm. and you know it is. It's everything that is central to who we are and what we believe as Christians wrapped up into 7 days, eight days. And so I cannot emphasize enough how important it is. And even so, we go through what's called the Great 3 days, the 3 days before Easter. So you have Maundy Thursday, and then you have Good Friday, and then you have Holy Saturday. And we have. Kind of one continuous worship service that runs over that 72-hour period where we gather for like an hour at a time on each of those days. But the idea is that, no, this is one worship. Like, we're moving through this time together because it's this sacred and holy time where we don't step out. And we do have to live in that cross for a while, right? We live in the sorrow and the grief and the death, and then we come back to the joy of the empty tomb. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've done a bad job of emphasizing just how critical Easter is. I think we've culturally we've overhyped Christmas, mm-hmm. and so as Christians we've allowed ourselves to get drug into this battle on Christmas and say, oh well, people are trying to take the Christ out of Christmas. I'm like, okay, they can have it personally. Like, you can take the Christ out of Christmas, and my faith is still pretty great.
Yeah.
But Easter is really where it's at, because without the resurrection, I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, Paul will say as much in several of his letters, right? If this isn't true, then why are we bothering?
Yes.
Right. Everything else doesn't matter unless the resurrection is true.
So, you know, a question has been raised, and it's been raised probably from the beginning, mm-hmm. is that resurrection literal?
Ooh.
Oh.
And maybe, you know, we can give our personal thoughts here, what we think here. What do we think? Is the resurrection of Jesus a literal resurrection?
I think it depends on what you mean by literal.
Okay.
What's your definition of is, Patrick? Sorry. no, I think, did Jesus actually raise from the dead and physically appear to his disciples? Yes, but I don't know what people define as like was it his body that came, like did he just
I think that's sit? What I think that's what you would mean by literal.
So. But like, you know, okay, so did he like sit up in the tomb and just like start walking around or what? You know, I don't know how that worked. I don't know the inner workings of the resurrection, uh-huh. but mm-hmm. Jesus came back in a bodily form and was raised from the dead in a way that the disciples and the women who saw him first and then eventually the disciples did not immediately recognize him. So something was different about him. Something was changed about him such that they didn't recognize him. But he was physically present among them, could eat with them, mm-hmm. Could, you know, let them touch him, could have conversation with them, but it was also a new thing.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's how that's
so you're
how I would
saying
talk
about. We're all going to be hotter versions of ourselves.
I didn't say he was heaven. More attractive.
That's what I heard.
He was unrecognizable.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's the official opinion.
Okay.
We all get real hot. Well,
so I guess where I get hung up, because sometimes we get into this idea of like, well, is it a literal resurrection then for us? And so then people use that as a reason not to be cremated or not to receive blood transfusions or other, you know, practices of it. Because in order to be resurrected, you have to be like yourself, and you have to be. And so like, you know, if you're literally resurrected, you know, if you die as an amputee, if you're literally resurrected, does that mean you're still an amputee in the resurrection? I'm like, I don't know. And I don't know how that literal sense works out in that connotation, but I do believe Jesus came back with a physical body that was present with the disciples, and I do believe that when we are raised, we will be raised in a physical sense to be in the presence of God forever and ever. Amen.
Okay.
Sounds good. Can't wait to be hot.
I did not say that.
I'm definitely in agreement with you. I think Paul will at one point say, like, hey, look, if Jesus didn't actually rise from the dead, mm-hmm. basically none of this matters. Like, it does not matter at all. Like that. Even like his teachings of like being kind and nice and loving your enemies, mm-hmm. irrelevant if this did not actually happen. And he even kind of says, like, I think a fun language of like, we should be pitied more than all men if Jesus did not rise from the dead. Like, we are spinning our wheels and wasting our time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
yeah.
Like, and so it's not even like connected to like, well, Jesus didn't rise from the dead, but we learned a lot from him. It's like they're one and the same according mm-hmm. to Paul.
Right.
And I would agree with that. Like, I think sometimes there are branches of progressive Christianity that are saying like, oh, maybe he didn't actually literally rise from the dead. And I would say, I think that misses the majesty and the excitement of what is actually transpiring here.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean you can't be cremated? I'm going to be honest. Like, there's a lot of people who died, no choice of their own, that their body does not exist anymore.
Right,
and, I think they're going to be okay. You know?
Agreed.
Same.
Yeah.
So, but I think it does lead to those questions, right? Like, why couldn't the disciples just, like, recognize him?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's only been, like, a couple days, you know? Like, I'm like, oh, what did Jesus look like again?
Right.
You know, like
half worm-eaten, like, situation. Yeah. It's not that,
yeah. Yeah, you know, but, like, kind of immediately, there's questions of like, is he the gardener?
Yeah.
Then he's appearing to disciples on the road, and they're like, hey man, Jesus was really awesome. And then they don't.
Tell me more about this awesome Jesus.
Then they don't really see him. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that is odd. I don't have a good reason for that or why, but it is odd. It does read some. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, for me, at least theologically, I don't know if this is like a scientific explanation. I guarantee it's not a scientific explanation, actually, not that. But I think theologically, for me, it's emphasizing the newness of creation in the resurrection. Mm. That when we're raised to new life, we are something substantially new, even if we are the same being, if you want to think of it that way, right? Mm. It's kind of like the old philosophy problem of like, if you're sailing on a ship, and as you sail, you replace every board on the ship. Is it the same ship when it gets to the new port? Because it's actually all new. I don't know. I mean, we're going to be something that the love of Christ in the resurrection transforms us into something that we don't recognize. Sure. And yet we are ourselves. We are more ourselves than we have ever been before, and thus unrecognizable.
Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah. It also is kind of interesting in the narrative that Jesus, post-resurrection, really, like, teaching time is over. Like, he's kind of, like, done with, like, no more parables.
So done with people.
No more parables, no more healings.
We're
it's kind of like
snacky snack, then we're gonna go
a little bit of hanging out, and then he's like, all right.
Or at least no parables and teachings that anybody wanted to write down.
That's true. Oh. We don't get a record of anything.
I mean, in Luke's account, he's there for like 40 days before the ascension.
Right.
And so he's around for a while, but nobody writes about it. Yeah. It's like, man, we hung out.
Luke is my favorite gospel.
Yeah.
Side note.
Okay. I like me too.
Luke is a good one.
I think, but you know, I maybe that is like, this is such like a special moment that they're like, this is kind of just for us. Yeah. You know, the disciples.
You don't get to know.
You know, they're only going to give you a little bit of it. You know, I guess we get a little bit more in John, where we get Jesus and Peter having kind of like a little healing time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but like really, after the resurrection, that's kind of it for Jesus's ministry on earth.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think that's also important, that it kind of puts that as the stamp of what Jesus is doing. Like, that's the final word is resurrection and hope in that resurrection.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to get to now, is this idea of, like, hope within the resurrection.
Okay.
So this is from, again, Christianity Today by Tim Keller. All right, so here in America, we have kind of a belief that every generation will have a better life than the previous generation. Mm-hmm. What do you agree, disagree?
I think that's a central tenet of America's philosophy.
Yeah.
And I think probably, you know, what's making now a little bit harder or difficult is now is maybe the first time where the current generation is saying, like, I'm not sure that's true.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure that's true for me. You know, like, and we're having issues where kids are saying, like, this is the first time we're not making more than our parents, despite having better education than our parents did.
Right.
We're not buying a home when we're 27, like mom and dad did. What happened? You know, and I think so I think we're kind of like, as in a country, and a little bit of like a question mark of like, was this always true?
Yes.
And a little bit of that. But I think that is kind of the idea that we're putting in hope in American ideology, is it's always going to get better.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, for so many people who came to the United States at one point or another, the reason that you come to the United States was always to provide for a better life for your family, right? Mm-hmm. And so whether you immigrated here in the, you know, 1700s, or you came in the 1950s, or came in the 2000s, right? You're coming to the United States because there's an opportunity for a better life, in theory, in most cases. And so I think that's kind of bred into our DNA of, you know, our parents worked hard so that their kids could have a better life or better opportunity. So they work hard so that and it just kind of keeps moving forward. Like, I've never consciously thought to myself, oh, my parents worked hard for me, so I should be making sure that I have a better life, even than they did, because my parents had it. We were all comfortable, right? We were at like a good middle class level. And so I don't, there is a level of like normalcy that I think we reach as a culture, but that's kind of going down a different rabbit hole altogether. Yeah.
But this isn't the only perceived way of life. I mean, we also have, you know, maybe Greek and Roman culture that they could identify, like, we had a golden age, and now we're on a slow decline from that golden age. And maybe even in America, there are parts here like, hey, what does the slogan "Make America Great Again" imply, except there was a golden age and we are no longer in it?
Yeah.
You know, like, and so whether that's intentional or not, I think that's the implication of it. And so I think these ideas of like, what does the future bring? What does hope bring? Is different. But in Christianity, I think we're seeing something for the last 2,000 years, this central idea of hope. What does that mean to the early Christians, to the middle-aged Christians, to Christians now? All right, that's what we're going to be looking at, okay?
Okay. What does hope mean?
That's a hard one to describe without using the word.
Without using the word hope?
Yeah, I just thought about that. I was like, how would I describe that to somebody?
Yeah, so you want to take a stab at it here? You're a writer here, Elise.
I am a writer. I'm not a dictionary.
Well, you could, you know, it doesn't have to be a definition. It could be, you know, a story. You know, you can tell us, what does hope mean?
I mean, I think it, what is it? The, can I do this without using the word hope in the description?
Yeah, probably.
I think it's the trust that things are going to be okay. What are you looking at me like that?
I'm just listening. I thought
you're
there
were, waiting for more.
I thought there was more. You paused in such a way that I thought perhaps there was more coming.
Yeah.
I might change trust to belief.
Okay.
But I'm with you. Yeah.
Semantics.
Yeah. You know, and I think probably in reality, it's a little bit of both of the trust and belief. I think hope is more than just wish.
Go ahead and sit on that fence there.
I think hope is more than just wish, but it's unproven. And I think that that whether you want to say that's belief, whether that's trust, I think that there could be a little bit attached to both of those.
Mm-hmm. But I think you can have, you have hope that's rooted in evidence, even if it's unproven. I mean, we don't hope in things that are not, as Christians at least, we don't hope in something that we don't have evidence for, right? I have evidence for God's redemptive work in the world, and so that's what I continue to hope for, because I've seen it happen, and I've heard the stories of how it happened. I have that evidence. I don't hope for God to give me a new truck in the morning because I prayed for it, because I don't have evidence that that has ever happened.
Sure. I guess the reason I use trust is we're, as Christians, we're talking about relating to a being, right?
Sure.
A being that...
I trust,
you know. I can get behind
trust. I was just adding evidence into the process. That's all, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's take a look at, he's got four ideas of what Christian hope is. So the first one, Christian hope is reasonable.
Hmm.
All right.
Is any hope really reasonable?
Well, let's dive in here.
This one is.
You can disagree, you can agree, whatever you want to say.
All right, Tim, let's see what you got here.
his first point is, he, for again, Tim Keller's perspective, mine as well, there is, you know, evidence and belief that the resurrection of Christ actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we talked about this resurrection event. What do we say? What do we put, hang our hat on of, like, was this actually was a historical event? What are you saying, like, why you think that?
Is it belief or is it trust?
Yeah. But when you say, we talked about this already, you and I both agree the resurrection of Christ was a historical event. Right. It actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
What are you hanging your hat on there for? Like, what are you saying? Like, and this is how I know that, or how I believe that.
I think there are two major things for me. Okay. I think one are the witnesses provided by the gospel, provided by the testament of people who were, I believe, inspired by the Spirit to write down these stories and have passed on those stories through the generations. And we've now said, okay, this is the collective understanding of how God is at work in the world. So there's that for me. Uh-huh. There's also the evidence of those who were martyred for their faith, especially early on. And there are historical records of those who were martyred for their faith. And to say, you know, like Paul said, like, you know, this is silly. If this didn't really happen, why are people dying for this? Why, you know, all but John of the original disciples, well, I guess Judas killed himself, but all but John and Judas die for their faith in one way or another. And why would those 12 disciples go to the grave saying Jesus was raised from the dead? Like, that's what they're killed for. They're killed for saying Jesus is raised from the dead.
Right.
So why would they go to the grave saying that if they knew that it wasn't true?
Yeah,
it seems like there are other ways to go about that. And that's a shallow argument. It's not necessarily evidence. It's evidence based in someone else's testimony, which is difficult.
Human nature as well, you know, and self-preservation. You know, you do probably almost anything to keep hold of your life as a person, right?
Yeah, it seems.
Yeah, we can be honest here. You know, the Gospels themselves were written a number of years after Jesus' death. I mean, potentially
at least 30.
You know, they're not hot off the presses. They may be hot off the presses from a historical point of view.
Sure.
You know, again, we can't,
in the expanse of time.
I think we can't conflate, like, this idea of, like, in today's world where we have a news media cycle that's instantaneous, and put that there. I'm like, how come they didn't have written records within a year of Jesus' death? Like, that's not really the case. Like, I mean, the first documentary or the first written word about Alexander the Great is like 250 years after he died.
Right.
I mean, like, there's a lot of time usually between written word and event in the ancient world. But Paul's letters, some of them are very quick comparatively.
Yeah, within 20 years, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the first one that we really have access, 1 Corinthians, he's going to go into resurrection of the Christ. It's central to this letter. And in that one, he's like, and if you want to know information, here's people you should ask. Mm-hmm. Ask these people. Like, they saw it. I talked to them. Talk to them. Yeah. And so I think we have, like, right away, the first really writing of Jesus, or of Christianity, highlights the resurrection and I think does back it up, you know, with
first,
like,
writing that survived.
Right? First writing that survived. First writing that we have.
We don't know that there weren't other letters and correspondence.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff,
let's talk about Q sometime. That's
right, yeah, we're going to get that later.
Wait, I want to talk about that.
It's not QAnon.
It's not that.
I was
hoping, but.
Yeah.
And then I think we also, you know, have this knowledge of, like, Jesus is not the first messianic figure.
Right.
Even in Judea.
Right.
Like, there were other people that came, they died, whatever mission or movement they had died with them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, and maybe all their followers were rounded up and killed, and then it was just like, burp, it's over.
Yeah.
And, like, they were lost in many ways to history.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of these we can know about, but, like, really, we don't have a ton of information. It's not common knowledge.
Right. Yep.
But for Jesus, this message to survive, I do think it has to be rooted in something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that for me, again, as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, do I say Christian hope is reasonable? I think I would say, yes, I agree.
Mm-hmm. So the argument about it being reasonable is that you have this hope because there's enough evidence to say it's reasonable to have this. You could support it with evidence, is what he's trying to say, by it being reasonable.
Yes. Now, you know, if you're a non-Christian, you might say, like,
that evidence doesn't
hold a can of water at all, or a glass of water at all.
Or a can, but however you get your water.
Water.
a box of water.
Right. Yes. Box water.
Right. That's.
It's a thing.
Like Franzia.
Can you get your water in a box?
Yeah, it's like a juice box kind of a thing, but it has water inside.
Coconut water comes
in a
box.
Who gets water in the juice box?
You could go to the gas station right now and there's water in a box, I promise you.
Don't drink water out of a box.
Yeah, full suspect.
Yeah, but I think that this does kind of have, like, here we go. And maybe we're speaking 2,000 years later, so it's pretty tough to say, like, the realities of what happened. Again, I walk away from the evidence of the resurrection as, like, plausible to realistic, and as a motivation for the early church that is extended to today.
Hmm.
And so I walk away thinking, like, I think Jesus definitely rose from the dead. It's not even a question, really, for me. But I understand. It might be for you as a listener.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so the other one, Christian hope is full.
Okay.
All right.
I don't know what he means by that.
Full of what?
Yeah.
All right, so this would be, Christianity is not the only religion in the world that offers a hope for life after death.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So every religion has that attached to it, or some version of a hope of life after death.
Yeah.
Right.
Of what happens when we die is a major question, whether you're Christian in America, whether you're a Hindu in India, whether you're a Buddhist in Japan, whether you're an atheist anywhere in the world, that is a question I think we all kind of share on some level. And then sometimes our secular culture, in contrast, will have kind of like everything falls apart in the end.
Right.
Like nothing really lasts.
Yeah.
Because at some point,
pretty nihilistic, really, yeah.
Yeah, at some point, this world will be destroyed. I mean, that's just the inevitability of it. You know, whether that's our own doing or not. And so Christianity has hope for both in those situations. But I think that's what it means. It's full. It's not just hope for an individual, what happens to me after I die, but also hope in that the resurrection of the entire world is wrapped up in Christianity.
Right.
That this, what we're doing matters on some level.
Yeah.
And like, it will be fixed on some level. And I think that that's a powerful way to have hope in this as well. Like, not only am I saved, like, the things I'm doing are saved.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to speak, like, for other religions because I'm not a member of one, but I think Christianity also offers hope for this life, too. It's not just a hope for future, right? It's a hope to have a a more fulfilling, more peaceful, more centered life while you're alive as well, instead of just after death.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's how we talk about, you know, we are saint and sinner, that we're resurrected now and not yet, right? We're still in this body, but we're also a resurrected people.
That really sounds like a biker tattoo. Saint and sinner. I love it every time I hear it.
Have you seen that there was an artwork piece that, like, if you look at it, One Direction, it says sinner, and if you turn it upside down, it says saint?
Oh, so you just, like, turn it around based on how you're feeling that day?
Like, I mean, you can, yeah. It's on, like, t-shirts and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah,
so I think this is a powerful one. I mean, and I think when we get into, like, images and visions of, like, what does the next world look like, I think this highlights this as well, that it's not just we die, our souls go to heaven, and there we get to live in clouds and play harps forever. Like, it really has, like, a very real... What's that, Elise?
No, I was just, did any of you feel like that was super boring as a kid when you were hearing about it?
Yes.
Like, I don't want to do that forever.
Right.
Yes.
I'll play this harp.
Right. That doesn't sound too great.
Sit on a cloud, play a harp. Right. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know.
It's better than that, folks.
I think we're really shaped by pop culture than reality. When we get to to scripture, it does not just speak of us dying and going to heaven. It actually speaks of a risen world, and we live on a new earth with a new Jerusalem right there.
Or Zion, as it were.
Or a new Zion, yes.
Zion would actually be accurate. It would be a new... You know,
so I think hope in the resurrection, it promises us not only a life that we should have had, it promises us a world that we should have lived in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think that that's really powerful. So I think when he says Christian hope is full, that's what we're really getting at. Okay. Third one, unless we have any other thoughts.
No, it's good.
I like it.
Christian hope is full and reasonable.
Okay.
Fully reasonable.
Christian hope is realistic.
Okay.
Again, can hope be realistic? I don't know.
Like, I'm going to say I'm okay if it's not realistic.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the point of hope, right?
Right, you hope for something beyond what you think you can actually achieve.
And right.
Like, if I know I can get it.
Right.
Am I really hoping for that? Like.
Then you just feel entitled to it.
Right. I'm hoping I'm going to eat dinner tonight. Like, no, I'm going to eat dinner tonight. Like, yeah, that's going to happen. Yeah. But, you know, I'm hoping for, like, a, you know, 30-ounce steak and garlic mashed potatoes and a nice bottle of wine. That's probably not going to happen. So
write a note to Tim Keller.
Mr. Keller.
All right. Well, why don't we let him kind of defend his statement before we kind of...
I don't think we need to.
Yeah, let's attack him whole cloth without any...
Yeah. Because I think now we're going to go kind of go back to that idea that we had of, like, America, our idea of hope for generations, and Rome, and it's kind of like golden age, and we're on a steady decline. So that's kind of the world we're looking at.
Yeah.
And I think in this one, his idea is, like, neither one of those is accurate or true.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, like, when we have a hope for every generation will be better off than the one before it, that's not accurate and it's not true, and we can't say that that's going to happen, even if the last couple generations we've hit that.
Right.
And we also can't just say, like, oh, there was a good time and now we're on a slow decline, because, again, that's obviously not true.
Right.
And so I think for him, he's tying into, like, not only in Easter do we have to go through death to get to a swinging up of hope. We can say in our world, hope doesn't just look like a staircase where every step gets you higher and higher and higher towards hope. Sometimes there's very real death and mourning attached to hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sometimes, like, it's not a trajectory. It's more of like a little, like a swoosh. You know, sometimes you go down and then you get to go back up, kind of a thing.
Right.
It's a Nike.
I was actually thinking about this earlier, how we think of things as a peak and then a decline.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened with Jesus is actually the polar opposite of that, right? It's a decline. It bottoms out and then it peaks.
Yeah.
You know, after that, it's an upward trajectory after that decline,
mm-hmm.
which I think is interesting to sort of transpose those two together.
Yeah.
If that makes sense without my hand motions that I just gave everybody in this room.
Yeah, and I think this gives us just, I think, a more reasonable way to see how life works, right? If we believe in either one of those two things, one gives us a false sense of, like, what happens when a generation does not experience the same success that their parents did, where kids are longer and longer having to live at home because the world, in many ways, kind of, like, shut doors that were open for their parents. And then it's like, this seems ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. So by realistic, he's saying it doesn't shy away from the challenges or yes. or the struggles of the, like, Christian Hope looks at the struggles and faces them head on and says, I'm gonna have hope in the midst of this. I'm gonna acknowledge that this is true, that we're in the middle of this death, or I'm in the middle of this darkness, however when I think about that. I'm gonna acknowledge that's true, and I'm still gonna have hope in the midst of that. Rather than just shying away from it, oh no, that's not real. Yeah. My hope doesn't look at that. My hope mm-hmm. looks death straight in the face and yeah. says, you got no power gotcha. Here. You got no power yes. here.
Yeah, and I think in this one, yes, again, all these little bullet points that are meant
right,
to
right. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it doesn't just say like, oh, your child is in the hospital. You right. should just have hope.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like, I think right, it's right. an honest thing, like, this is real mourning and this yeah. is real pain and suffering. Yeah.
So but, I think my issue is with Mr. Keller's bullet points, not with his actual sure. point.
That was his actual bullet.
Yeah. I think he's just being pithy, and I don't think he's being pithy in a helpful way. I think.
Ooh.
But,
okay, wow. Shots fired.
Hopefully pithy.
Yes. I think the expansion, like the explanation, is very helpful, and I appreciate where yeah. that's going. I just think the headlines here are not
okay.
painting a fully accurate sure. picture of what
he's
trying to
say.
I was going
to say, like, why don't you just read what I wrote instead of just reading like the sure. bold part here. That's
I mean,
on
I
you.
Did, and that's obviously what we're talking about. I just feel like he could have come up with bold parts that more fully encapsulated what he was getting at.
All right, point four.
Don't come at me and then get mad at me when I defend myself. All right.
Yes, so I'm moving past.
You sit
past
on
it.
Your hands until after he reads the explanation.
I will gesture wildly as I so choose.
Point four: Christian Hope is effective. You want to respond to the bullet point, or do you want to? You
know, no, because I agree. I think Christian Hope is effective, so okay. I'm on board with this one.
Well, you could agree and still want to respond to it. What do you think? Why do you think that's?
Well, you came
case?
At me with clearly thinking I was going to disagree. So I think Christian Hope is effective because I've seen it. I've seen it play out in people's lives. I've mm-hmm. seen it play out in my own life when we have that hope in the resurrected Christ, even when. Even when things do not go as we want or as we yeah. desire or as we would wish for, we see them play out in the long game in a way that we believe, yeah, Christ is present in the midst of this, right? Yeah. I've seen death result in families having renewed relationships or having restored opportunities for healing. I've mm-hmm. seen, you know, illness have people the opportunity to heal in ways they didn't even know they needed to heal. I've seen addictions lead people into new and greater recovery. I mean, I've seen that not happen, right? In all the cases that I can point to where it has happened, I've seen plenty of times when it hasn't, mm-hmm. but I've seen hope be a central theme that leads people through those times in a more positive and meaningful way.
Yeah.
That if you have two people who walk through the same circumstances, one holding on to hope and one rejecting hope in that sense, I would put money on the person holding on to hope to mm-hmm. come through that in a more positive
yeah.
positive way.
Yep.
Yeah, I think when we're saying like hope, when it comes to like hope in ourselves or the future, it's always based on kind of like relative or unknown terms, right? Mm-hmm. Like we're always saying like you take a farmer, you sow the seed, you hope there will be rain, you hope it will grow. But those are really, you can't say for certain
yeah.
that those things will happen. You loan somebody money, you hope that they will repay you, but you can't say for certain that will happen. You know, like, so when it comes to hope in the things of this world, it's always kind of like, I really, really would like for this to mm-hmm. work out, mm-hmm. and I think it will, but we have factors and variables that are far beyond our control
yeah.
that are attached to it. And so when we say Christian hope is effective, it's saying like, I'm no longer hoping in things that I can control and things that are within my grasp. I'm hoping in something bigger or greater. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where we get into like, and that's why it's yeah. effective.
Yeah.
Because it's no longer me hoping in just the work of my own hands that might fail. It's me hoping in something that can't fail.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's the real challenge for us, what you got in there, right? Is because we often think of hope in things that actually can fail us.
Yeah.
And we are accidentally misplacing our hope, thinking that we're placing our hope in the right place. So, we go into a hospital room with our loved one who's ill, and we place all of our hope in their healing in this life
mm-hmm.
without realizing that the hope that we place our hope, that we place it, no, the place that we put our hope is actually much bigger than being healed in this
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
And that sometimes that hope results in a physical healing in this life. And sometimes that hope results in a much greater healing
sure.
that comes through death.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, I think in faith, hope is almost always about the long game, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
so even if a circumstance doesn't work out or whatever, eventually this will work for good. Eventually this will be a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of a powerful point, too. I think to your thing, if you have all that hope mm-hmm. in the diagnosis
right.
and it comes back negative, it's easy to be devastated right. and mm-hmm. wrecked by it. But if your hope is not in the diagnosis, your hope is in something greater and bigger mm-hmm. in God or in Christ, then it is impossible mm-hmm. for whatever that diagnosis is to really wreck or shape what's going, like where your real hope is placed,
right. Right.
because it's something bigger.
Right. The diagnosis isn't changed.
Yes.
But where we place our hope is changed. Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of like to think too, like, imagine you're on an airplane and you're sitting on the airplane.
All right.
Yes, you're there.
I'm there.
And Pastor David, you have incredibly high hope in the pilot and their skill, right?
Sure, I do. That feels reasonable.
Yep. Yes. I have very high hope in their skill. Okay, I got it.
And Elise, you're also on that airplane, mm-hmm. and you have an incredibly low hope in the pilot and their skill level.
That sounds right.
Oh, there's a song that this reminds me of.
Yeah.
Keep going.
But in reality, your hope, whether strong or weak, is irrelevant, right? Like, the pilot is truly in right. control of those situations. You could have
the pilot isn't sitting up there saying, "Oh man, I hope everybody on board right. is hoping in me because yeah, otherwise yeah. we're in trouble."
Yeah, and so like you know, you could have incredibly strong faith and hope in a terrible pilot,
sure.
or you could have incredibly weak hope and faith in an awesome pilot, but. A weak hope in an awesome pilot is better than a strong hope
in a terrible pilot. Yeah.
And I think that's what I think we're saying. Like, even if we have weak hope in a strong God, that is far better.
It's the pilot, not the passenger.
Yeah, than strong hope in ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. There's just 4 points. Any other thoughts?
I like the resurrection a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's worth 7 weeks. I think it's worth having 7 weeks to remind ourselves of this.
Now, I am pro putting more emphasis on the resurrection and perhaps less, I don't know about less, but maybe backing off a little bit on the incredible emphasis that we put on the death of Jesus mm-hmm. and just shifting some of that focus onto the resurrection.
So I'll tell you this. This is like the 30-second version. So you know why we don't?
It's harder to draw a tomb than a cross.
No, because historically, focus on the resurrection has led to what we call a theology of glory. And so it's been all about this glorification of Christ without looking at the suffering that Christ had to go through in order to be glorified. And so it's an ancient debate and a piece that comes out big in Martin Luther's arguments as well. We have this theology of the cross that the cross is the driving factor because it's through death that we're able to achieve this glory. And if we don't focus on that death, if we don't go through Good Friday, then we have a weak understanding of what that glorification means. And we come out looking like Joel Osteen, thinking that, you know.
Yeah, well, nobody wants that.
we come out on the other side saying, like, oh, well, I believe in God, so now everything's glory. Everything's gravy in my life. Everything should be great. And that's not the path.
Right.
And so, yeah, I think we could do a better job of emphasizing resurrection, emphasizing empty tomb. But that's probably the hesitation that you've seen there is not wanting to.
Yeah. I think in reality, we did do a better job of like speaking of kind of the marriage between the two of like how one and the other are both central to our faith. Right.
Sure.
Like, so we ought to do a better job of saying like what Jesus' death means for us, whether that pays the substitute for my death, whether that pays the price for my sins, whatever you want to wrap that up. And it's
kind of a
mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And then the resurrection is kind of the how it is sealed for eternity. Mm-hmm. And both those things are necessary for Christianity, I think, to grow from a handful of people in Israel and 2,000 years ago to a worldwide church.
Yeah.
So.
And just to be clear, we don't need Easter bunnies and Easter candy for 7 weeks, but you know, spending 7 weeks in church talking about Jesus' resurrection, I think is meaningful.
Listen, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right.
Yeah. I am making the pledge right now.
Right.
I will eat chocolate.
7 weeks.
7 weeks of chocolate.
Yeah. Yeah, you spend Lent denying yourself.
Ask yourself.
Yeah. Now indulge.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think that's everything we got.
All right. Hey, if you enjoyed what you heard on this podcast, or if you've ever been resurrected, I don't know, maybe.
Whoa, yeah.
Do we want those stories?
Yeah, absolutely, I do.
Tell me.
Hey, if you liked what you heard, be sure to share this podcast with friends and family or whoever needs a word of hope in their life. We hope that this helped you today. We hope. How many times can I put hope into this ending?
Yeah.
We hope that you can find this podcast wherever great podcasts are available, particularly on Apple, iTunes, and Spotify. and the Google Plays. That's all the places. And so, you can find us, of course, on our website at beyondsundaypodcast.com or send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com.
Are there other places you can get podcasts?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure. Lots of them. Yeah. Stitcher and...
are we on Stitcher?
Audible. No, we're not on Stitcher. You have to, like, pay to be on there. Oh. And people have to, like, pay to have a Stitcher membership.
We're on SoundCloud, right?
I don't know that we are on SoundCloud.
Maybe. I don't know.
That's how I listen to it.
Oh, then we're on SoundCloud.
Well, website.
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, you can just listen off the website.
That's what I do. It's okay. The easiest.
Is anybody still listening?
How was that easiest? Your phone is right there with your iTunes.
I don't know how to work that. Okay. I know a website, though.
You're still out there, listeners? We're sorry.
All right, well, thanks. We'll see everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.